welcome to AGC of Alaska's Build Alaska podcast. My name is Bronson Fry. I am your host this morning, and I am joined today by my friend Frank Mucci, the training director for the Alaska Carpenters Training Trust. How are you doing today, Frank?
Best day yet, Bronson. Thanks for the invite.
Well, good. It's good to have you here. And I'd like to start out just kind of generally, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what your background is. It would be nice to kind of hear your story a little bit.
Okay, thank you. Born in Massachusetts, raised in a small maritime town of Riverview, New Brunswick, Canada. Broken home, four brothers and sisters. Sort of struggled through high school. I had enough leash to choke myself with, so to speak.
Right.
And was lacking direction, and moved back down to New Hampshire with my father for a little while. I had a cousin that was joining the military. Mm-hmm. Said, hey, you need to come talk to a recruiter. So I went down that road. I served 8 years in the paratroopers, a couple of years in 3rd Ranger Battalion in Fort Benning, Georgia, first of the 508th Airborne Combat Team out of Vicenza, Italy, followed by, here in Alaska, J. Bear's own 1st of the 501st Parachute Infantry Regiment. During that time, I had several deployments, Bosnia, Kosovo, kind of on the tail end of that, and then, of course, the War on Terror after 9/11. Served a tour in Afghanistan. At that point, I was about 7 years into my military career, had been in a high-tempo unit for the entirety of it, and it seemed like I was never home for longer than 3 months at a stretch, which was fine. I was very proud of my service, and if I were to do it all over again, I wouldn't change a thing. Mm-hmm. But I was just at a turning point where I wanted to kind of get my feet underneath me and on some solid ground somewhere and kind of take root.
Mm-hmm.
So we're over there in the sandbox, and we, after about 8 months over there, we got the opportunity to have internet connection. We had a little internet library. If you had some downtime, you'd go wait 2 hours in line for about 15 minutes of Afghanistan dial-up connection.
Wow.
And I started looking for opportunities in Alaska, like what's the next step? How am I going to transition into the civilian world when I don't have a whole lot of transferable skills? And I stumbled upon a Helmets to Hard Hats website for construction trades.
Wow.
I knew one thing was for sure. If I got out, I'd be right back off where I started. Mm-hmm. In a lot of senses. I'd be, 26 years old with a high school education and no transferable skills. So it's like, what do I need? I need to pay my truck payment. I need to put food in my belly. I need a roof over my head. I can't be a full-time college student. I need to earn while I learn.
Mm-hmm.
And registered apprenticeship was absolutely the best thing that I could have possibly stumbled upon. I applied for several. Carpenter was always a good fit. There's some carpenter lineage in my family. And when I got back to Alaska, I transitioned out of the military. A lot of the registered apprenticeships up here, they only do intake once a year. So I had a little downtime in between. And so I went and jumped on a small framing crew for a custom home in Eagle River, starting at minimum wage just so I could get my feet wet and get a little experience to make myself a better candidate for the apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
4 years later, I got my journeyman certificate.
Nice.
And I loved it. It was a really easy transition. What a lot of people don't realize about the trades, it's the chain of command is very similar to a military unit.
Oh, interesting.
And veterans transition well into apprenticeship because they already follow orders and direction very well. They're already used to getting up at the crack of dawn.
Right.
And so it wasn't a tough transition. I fit in pretty well. And, worked through my apprenticeship. Didn't take a single vacation, just trying to save money and get my hours to get my certificate, and then worked another 4 or 5 years in the field as a general carpenter. Everything from the digging the hole in the ground to cleaning off the windows when you're handing the keys over to the owner, and a lot of different commercial jobs. And then I had the opportunity to work as a general foreman for Neisser Construction on a job on South Central Foundation, a remodel. So I had a little crew under me, and I got a phone call near the tail end of that from one of my old trainers, asked if I was interested in being an instructor.
Interesting.
And I sort of did a double take. I never thought of myself as the instructor type. Mm-hmm. And I texted him back. I said, well, what do you need, like an upgrade, journeyman upgrade instructor? He said, no, full-time apprenticeship instructor.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, this, you know, we're not going to text back and forth about this. I'll, I'll come sit down with you and we'll have a conversation about
sure.
it. So. The timeline worked out. I was able to finish the job I was on and turn over the keys back to South Central Foundation, and then started as a trainer. Had a great mentor to work under, which was absolutely fantastic. It's one of the best things about our industry is we're always training the ones that are coming up behind us mm-hmm. to take the reins. And 2 years of that, and then I had, through folks retiring and leaving state, I had the opportunity to apply for the training director position, and got it. And that was about 2 years ago now.
Wow.
So that's, I don't know, my story in a nutshell.
That's pretty impressive. Thank you for your service to our country as a paratrooper and overseas. Sounds like numerous times. I think it's interesting you mentioned having transferable skills, and when you were starting to think about transitioning out of the military into the civilian world and workforce, did you find ultimately, once you started your apprenticeship as a carpenter, that you did have transferable skills that you learned as a serviceman in the Army?
I would say yes. In a military unit, you're doing everything from working on your vehicles, out in the woods digging your foxholes. So there's a lot of laborious mm-hmm. duties in the military, and so to a certain extent, I would say absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But before I went through apprenticeship,
mm-hmm.
like honestly speaking, here the only thing that my right hand was really useful for was to hand something to my left hand.
Right.
And those are all skills that I learned through the apprenticeship and working in the field, is becoming, you know, very ambidextrous and
sure
with more manipulative skills. But there were definitely some things. One thing that's really relatable is just environment, being able to adapt to a new situation. Every job is different, every task is different, and I mean, that's what the military is all about. And then inclement weather, you know, you're put in all sorts of different situations, and you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell
right.
you got to have a little bit of grit to be a tradesman in Alaska. You know, if we only
yeah.
built during the sunny days, nothing would ever get built.
Right. That's a great point. So there's a lot of work ethics that can be gained that would transfer well, and environmental awareness, the chain of command. I thought it was interesting you mentioned that was kind of similar in construction.
Absolutely. Everything that I'm looking for as a director,
mm-hmm.
The soft skills.
Interesting.
Right? 90% of our applicants, 90-ish, don't have previous carpentry experience.
Sure.
We'll teach them to be carpenters. We're not looking for good carpenters. That'll come with time mm-hmm. and training and experience.
Sure.
What we're looking for is good people.
Yeah.
And those are a lot of the traits that I picked up in the military. If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I have always felt that communication skills are way underrated in construction, that if you have the ability to build rapport with people and communicate, you know, clearly what you need and so on and so forth, you can have a lot of success in a construction environment, whether it's in an office or on the field. in whatever role. So that's kind of interesting to hear you pick up on that as well from your perspective as a training director, where you're looking for folks to come in and start their careers, that would be something you would emphasize. How do you think if somebody was looking to transition into, say, your apprenticeship program, how would you recommend somebody build those skills that are so necessary, so maybe some of those soft skills?
Well, I definitely recommend everyone that comes through our door that has a little time on their hands before the selection process circles back around to take any class related through Alaska Works Partnership, for instance. They're a great partner. We took in 30 apprentices through Alaska Works Partnership.
Oh, wow.
And I've been over, I've talked to their classes, and Will Andrew and Brian Howe and all the great hardworking people over there, they're teaching those things. They're taking people from all walks of life into those classes and teaching them the little things that are going to help you be successful.
Nice.
They teach interview skills. They tell you what a contractor is looking for. They bring in leaders from the industry to talk to all these students to kind of get them set on that pathway.
Very nice. Alexis, the executive director for Alaska Works Partnership, just recorded a podcast with us here not too long ago. So that's available out there if you want to check that out. Now, when you are interested in joining an apprenticeship, you mentioned you had to wait a little while to be able to get into yours. So maybe you could explain just in broad strokes how the application process to the Carpenter's Apprenticeship works, so that anybody listening to this has some idea of what direction to go if that's something they might be interested in.
Okay, so we have five crafts. We have carpenters, industrial scaffold erectors, millwrights, divers, and pile drivers. For all of our programs, we accept applications year-round through the last work day in December, so in around December 30th. Pretty minimal requirements. You have to be 18 years of age, have a valid driver's license, be an Alaska resident, have a high school education or GED, and that's about it. We try to knock down as many barriers as we can. So once a candidate applies, if they apply early, I tell them any training that they get in the meantime or any work experience, letters of recommendation, they can always add them to their packet throughout the year.
Okay.
And once we close, we review them all, and we invite every candidate to an orientation. And to be eligible for an interview, you need to attend the orientation. And we do a pretty good job of the whole run down there of what to expect as an apprenticeship, because it really is a marathon. It's not a sprint. I mean, we're offering very high paying jobs and lifelong career skills, and it's pretty competitive. So they need to show up for that orientation day to be eligible, and we lay it all out to them, and then we do Q&A. And then from there, Alaska Works Partnership holds an interview skills class.
Oh, okay.
And then we're followed by 2 days of interviews. We have a little math test too. It's nothing too difficult. Just want to make sure that our candidates have enough between the years that we can work with. Because you know what the math teacher in 10th grade doesn't tell you is in the building trades, you'd be using far more math than just about any career out there.
Yep.
It's like even a CPA, they're only dealing with addition and subtraction, but, you know, we're dealing with Pythagorean theorem, turning angles, building layout, elevations. You need to be pretty sharp on that aspect.
Outstanding. Glad you mentioned that. Thank you. So they go through that process. They talk to Alaska Works. What's the next step for somebody looking, or where would they go from there as they progress through the application process to the Carpenter's Apprenticeship?
Well, once their application's in, we we encourage them to check back in with us, and we'll follow up with them before the for the orientation time, and really put a lot of emphasis on if this is something that they really want, not to give up on the first try. I remember I applied coming out of the military for the operators with zero equipment experience, and they were getting, at the time, what I was told was upwards of 300 applications a year for about, you know, a dozen slots.
Yikes, yeah.
And now as I'm the training director for, as training director for the carpenters, I see the same thing. We get about 200 applications for about 20 slots. So we try to coach them up if they're not ready and they really want to take another stab at it the next year, to try to give them a pathway to getting there. One would be encouraging outdoor work, working whether it be landscaping or,
sure.
or laboring, anything that's going to get you out in the elements, mm-hmm. on your feet, working with your hands rather than, in retail or fast food,
sure.
or nice. Something along those lines. and I encourage them to get their application back in because there are potentially direct enter opportunities. If all of our apprentices are working and a contractor has a demand for more, we can pull off of our ranking list.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just something I try to stress, apply and not apply to often. Give up. Yeah.
Now, how many openers do you have in a year? Is it just one then?
Just one opener a year, yeah.
All right. And what time of year is that?
So
does it change or is it usually the same?
Interviews will be around late February, early
okay.
March. And class always starts the following Monday after Anchorage School District gets out. Anchorage, the Valley gets out a week earlier.
And how does...
To try to accommodate for the few high schoolers that get
sure.
into the program. So, and that's one of the reasons. The main reason is it gets them all trained up. They get their 6 weeks of training in, and then we get to set them free into the field.
Nice.
Right during the busy season.
Yeah, that's really, that's pretty cool that you'll bring people in, train them on some basic skills and safety, I'm sure, up front before they ever step foot on a job site. So how does the class work then? Do they do it in a block of training? Is it a few hours in the evening? Or how long is it that you said 6 weeks, I think?
Six weeks a year for the carpenters.
Okay.
Four for the pile drivers and scaffold and divers and...
Mm-hmm.
Millwrights, they'll do a 4 week block their first year.
Okay.
And then from there, they do two week blocks.
Gotcha.
Per year. So they're all a little bit different.
Okay.
They all start off at 60% of journeyman scale.
Okay.
Plus benefits, which is about $45 day one. They're not paid while they're in school.
Right.
But they're eligible for unemployment. There's a lot of great workforce development programs within our state through the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. They get tools. Most of them apply for tools and gear. And so there's really no cost to the apprenticeship coming in. And it's, completely earn while you learn.
And what is approximately 60% of a journeyman's wage?
So 23 an hour on the check and another 26 and some change.
Gotcha.
In benefits, so
all right.
Closer to 50 an hour.
All right.
And
yeah, I was going to ask about that. So, all right, so they coming in, they apply, go through some training, and then when they're dispatched out to work, right about when the busy season starts, ideally, a brand new apprentice in the Carpenters Union will be making about $23 an hour on the check. And about $26 an hour in benefits on their very first day. So that's a pretty great start to a career, I would say. If somebody is looking to get into the trades, that sounds like a pretty good option. Now you mentioned that a lot of times in the past there hasn't been enough work to support the large number of applicants to some of these programs. So how is the work outlook going currently, and are you expecting to bring in a lot of apprentices or more than normal, or how do you feel about the upcoming outlook for how many guys you're going to take in, guys and gals?
Yeah, great question. The biggest backbreaker of apprenticeship is no work. So we do a really great job at policing up after ourselves and only taking in as many as the industry can support.
Good.
Since 2015, construction had been on a constant slide in Alaska, but we're starting to, it feels like we're starting to crawl out of it. We got a lot of contractors with a lot of work coming up on the books, and they're absolutely booming up north with right. all the military base work.
Good.
So the average class size in Anchorage for carpenters was roughly 35 first years every year. Last year, I only took 20.
Okay.
This year, we're taking about 26, so we're starting to climb out of it. Good news is virtually all of our apprentices had a pretty good year and stayed fairly busy. So in Fairbanks, it's sort of been the opposite. They take a class of 10 to 12 typically for first year, and with everything that's going on up there, they're taking as many as they can possibly handle.
Oh,
so they took 17 last year, they're taking 16 this year.
Okay.
And they're all working.
Gotcha.
Every last one of them are,
gotcha.
Are up there making some good wages and benefits.
How long do you think Fairbanks will be rocking and rolling like that? Any way to tell?
I think with all the growth on the military bases, it's looking like it's projected to have a big population influx just in support of
right
military bases. And
good.
I mean, if you've ever been to Fairbanks, there's a lot of potential there, right? There's a lot of land mm-hmm. and
sure.
potential for growth, for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear brothers in Fairbanks doing well.
Yeah.
That sounds, good.
We foresee for at least the next 4 or 5 years, foreseeable future, it's looking pretty good.
And it's good to hear Anchorage is slowly seeming to pick up a little bit. I'd say I see some of the similar trends in my spot as the business representative for the Painters and Allied Trades Union. So we have an apprenticeship that we operate similar to yours in the Carpenters Union. And we're slowly beginning to bring in more folks. And
yeah.
So there are opportunities out there. I did want to circle back around on one thing. And that was the Helmets to Hard Hats program. I don't know if everybody out there listening to this is familiar with that program. And you mentioned that in one of your quick 15 minutes on Afghani dial-up internet, you came across a website, Helmets to Hard Hats website, that ultimately directed you towards these registered apprenticeship programs, and you found yourself in the Carpenters. But maybe you could tell us from your perspective as a military veteran, what is the Helmets to Hard Hats and how did it work for you? And if someone out there listening to this is themselves a transitioning veteran, where would you recommend they go to get more information on this?
So locally, Alaska Works Partnership has a Helmets to Hard Hats rep, Carrie, over there.
Okay.
She deals with them directly. But any veteran from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening from, Helmets to Hard Hats, I believe it's .org, not .com, but Bronson's fact-checking me right now. It essentially, whatever area you're looking at, all of the job opportunities will pop up on a page, addresses, phone numbers, websites. So it's a really great way to connect. And there's a lot of help out there for vets. So through the GI Bill, a veteran can use his GI Bill for registered apprenticeship. So you're starting off at 60%, some trades 50% of journeyman scale. But if you're coming in as a veteran, honorable discharge, and have GI Bill benefits, they'll pay you the E5 BAH rate, so basic allowance for housing, while you're an apprentice, which is about $2,200 a month. So it's bridging that gap between apprentice pay and journeyman pay.
Wow.
Which makes it a really easy transition.
That's a significant advantage.
And,
yeah.
And as you get pay raises throughout your apprenticeship, your
that
BAH rate
will go down.
Goes down
yeah.
and it tapers
wow.
down. So.
That's pretty impressive, and I believe it offers an avenue for direct indentureship into some of these registered apprenticeship programs, which is really helpful. So it would be definitely worth checking out. If you are a veteran yourself and listening to this and want more information on Helmets to Hard Hats, it is .org, so helmetstohardhats.org. can give you more information on that program. It's something that I know, Frank, you and I were talking before we started recording. We both feel pretty strongly about there is a huge need for qualified workers. There's a lot of skilled craftsmen and women coming out of the military, and there is a natural fit here, I think, for a lot of folks. And we just want to make sure everybody knows that this is an avenue and an option out there that can really be helpful. And not only in the pay, making up some of that difference when you first start out, but also offering direct indentureship into some of these registered apprenticeship programs is a really helpful thing. And we have brought in folks, I know, in our apprenticeship for paint and glazing or glasswork that have had a military background, been able to bring them in directly because of their military status through the Helmets to Hard Hats program, and have found just a ton of success for both the workers and the employers.
Excellent.
Are really happy. And so I just want to make sure folks out there know that this is an option for them, particularly our transitioning veterans, that this is a great career opportunity, and you may have more skills than you realize that apply directly to the construction building trades. that's the thrust of the message of today. I wanted to get out there. Do you have anything else?
No, that's great job. Great job, Bronson.
No, thank you for sitting down.
Thank you so much for the invite. And you know, while we're one more thing to touch on the veterans. So yeah. I go over to J-Bear pretty regularly, and I'll talk to the vets about registered apprenticeship, not only the building trades, but, you know, other earn while you learn programs. And I'll go around the room. One of the first questions I ask, I'll have a room of about 20 transitioning vets, and I'll ask, how many of you are staying in Alaska? And one or two hands will go up.
Interesting.
You know, so it's a tough market to recruit for.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the more we hit it, the more the message gets out nationwide to, you know, not just our programs here in Alaska. They've got the brotherhoods everywhere. So
yeah, that's one thing about these apprenticeship programs is they're transferable. You can move around the country if you need to go where there is a better economy, more work. You have that option.
Yeah, we have a nationwide, our training records are North America-wide. I could go work for a contractor in Toronto, Canada. I could go work for a contractor in San Diego, California. And they punch in my name, all my trainings pop up,
right,
where I've been, what I've done. It's just really good. It's really great. Once you have those skills, no one can take them from you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for your time today,
thanks,
Frank.
Again.
It's been fun chatting with you today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.